The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I was reading this interesting article. It's got nothing to do with Israel really, but it's of course it's part of the Jewish world, about this Lev Tahor group in the United States that apparently is asking for political asylum in Iran, which I found quite fascinating.
Oh,
I don't know if you saw that at all.
Well, if you follow the antics of this group, which is actually a cult more than it is anything else, I think Iran is a perfect place for them to go. And I think I would hope that Iran would open its doors to them. I think it could be
very
a match made in heaven, really.
Very strange indeed.
It is. All right, to tell us even more strange, what is going on with Israel's national election? The election took place last week. No government formed yet. President Reuven Rivlin holding second day of consultations today with leaders of the party who were elected. Where are we in this process?
So Ruvi Rivlin yesterday began his consultations. He's not going to ask any party to form a government at least until Wednesday, because that is when the final election results will be presented to him. So until that moment, he's not really in a position to ask anybody to form a government anyway. Having said that, he already has a very clear understanding of what the election results are, even though the final results have not yet been presented to him. But he knows what they are, and he knows where things are going, and he already yesterday began meeting with leaders of the various parties who were elected to see which way the wind is blowing. And I think the most interesting meetings for him yesterday were the ones that he held with the Joint Arab List, which represents 13 Knesset seats, and the one that he held with Avigdor Lieberman from Yisrael Beiteinu, who has 8 Knesset seats. And they are really the kingmakers in all of this process, because their votes are going to be the critical ones that make a big difference between the whether it's Kahol Lavan who forms the government, or whether it's going to be the Likud who forms the government. And what's interesting for me is that the Joint Arab List, represented by its leader Ayman Odeh, actually came out saying that even though Benny Gantz does not represent what he called our cup of tea, but he thinks that by supporting Gantz, that is the only way to oust Netanyahu. And from the Arab population point of view, that's more important than anything right now. So therefore, Ayman Odeh says to President Rivlin yesterday, the Joint Arab List will support Gantz to form a government, 13 seats in support, but not quite, because one of the factions within the Joint Arab List is disagreeing, and that's a faction that's led by Ahmed Tibi, and he's saying, I think he represents 3 seats out of the 13, and he's saying that he would not support Gantz forming a government under any circumstances. And even though we are led to believe, we understand that once a party has said it will support a certain leader to form a government, and once that vote takes place, that it effectively takes place under a whip, which means that all of the members of that party are obliged to vote as the party wishes them to vote, and not as they wish to vote individually. Ahmed Tibi is saying quite clearly that his 3 seats will not support Benny Gantz forming a government. And so whereas if all 13 seats of the Joint Arab List support Gantz, he would, we think, have the support of 57 Knesset members out of the 120, as opposed to the 54 that we think, or the 55, sorry, that would support Netanyahu in the current constellation. If we take the 3 seats away from Gantz that Ahmed Tibi represents, he suddenly moves into the minority with 54 seats as opposed to 57, and therefore ostensibly Netanyahu has 1 seat majority. Having said that, neither of them command a 61 seat majority, which of course is required, and that's because Avigdor Lieberman has made quite clear that he's not going to support either of them. He thinks that both parties in their current, the way that they're currently moving, are problematic for him, both on the left and on the right of politics. And therefore, He only supports the notion of a national unity government that excludes the religious parties and that excludes the Arab joint list. And that's the one that he would support. And so he's come out to President Rivlin saying, I'm not supporting anybody right now. And so we still have very much a stalemate. And what's interesting as well is that whereas the Kahol Lavan faction originally on Thursday had decided that they would quite like the chance to form the government and be the first to have a go at it, apparently over the weekend their view has now changed and they are advising leader Benny Gantz not to take up the mantle and not take up the challenge of forming the government first, but to rather allow Netanyahu to have first shot at forming the government, allow him to fail, and then come in and see what they can do in the light of Netanyahu's failure. So there are definitely tactics at work here and a lot of strategies being played, but we still don't have any clear indication at this stage of who President Rivlin will ask on Wednesday evening, once he's had the election results handed to him, who he will ask then to form a government. It's still very unclear at this stage.
So it appears as though what he's trying to do is not have to ask. He's trying to get them to, it's almost like he's mediating at this point, until it gets to a situation where it can't happen, after which he's going to ask one of them to try and form the government. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think that would be a fair assessment. I think he is doing mediation at the moment, and it's very, very clear that he's supportive of Avigdor Lieberman's view, which is that a national unity government is required in order to give Israel the stability that's needed at a governmental level. He's not quite going as far as Lieberman went to say, well, that national unity government needs to exclude the ultra-Orthodox and exclude the Arab joint list party. He's not saying that at all, but he's saying very strongly that a national unity government is required, and of course that national unity government will need to involve both Kahol Lavan and Likud. And the other little snippet that has been added into all of this is that the Attorney General has made clear that the legal process against Netanyahu on the charges that he is accused of in terms of fraud and in terms of general malpractice as prime minister and involving other positions in government as well. The Attorney General has said that instead of slowing the legal process down, he's planning to do exactly the opposite and to potentially speed it up. So that could also be one of the key factors in determining whether Prime Minister Netanyahu will still be in a position even to lead a government in the future with those legal charges apparently being accelerated, or at least the process of bringing those charges being accelerated.
So there's actually no way of calling it. Just remind me how many seats the ultra-Orthodox parties have.
So just a reminder just of the general lie of the land in terms of all of the number of seats that have been won in the election. Just a summary, again, it's not final, but we do now have a very, very clear understanding. So blue and white, Kahol Lavan, Benny Gantz party, 33 seats. Likud, 31 seats. The joint Arab list is third largest with 13 seats. Shas is obviously the ultra-Orthodox party led by Ari Aderi with 9 seats. Yisrael Beiteinu, we already mentioned, with 8 seats. The United Torah Judaism party, 8 seats, which means that Shas and the United Torah Judaism party together, the ultra-Orthodox parties, 17 seats in total. Then we have Ayelet Shaked's Yamina party with 7 seats, the Labour Gesher Alliance with 6 seats, and the Democratic Union, which was the party that was formed by Ehud Barak, although he's nowhere to be seen, 5 seats. That is the current summary and is quite unlikely to change going forward. The one thing that we haven't spoken about at all, but which I think is worthy of mention, is that the voter turnout was just short of 70%, 69.7%, which was very much surprising people who were calling this, because they thought that the voter turnout would be significantly less than the 68.4 who turned out in April, and yet it exceeded that by, you know, a comfortable way. 69.7% of the people voted. Apparently huge turnout in the Arab sector. We've seen that with the joint Arab list winning 13 seats. But in general, people turned out. And so that's just another interesting, thing that people got wrong in the lead up to the election.
And final question on this before we move on to another subject. The party needs, they would need how to gain how many seats in order to govern?
Well, with the Knesset being 120 seats, the general majority is 61 seats, which is needed for a government. And of course, the president would be very reluctant to agree to form a minority government if that's what was recommended. So definitely we need 61 seats to get past the post. And at the moment, neither of the main parties look likely to be achieving that.
Really, really quite unbelievable. Israel is planning to cut power supply to the Palestinian Authority over huge unpaid debt. What implications does this have?
Well, I think this has major implications because, of course, we do know that Israel is the main supplier of power to the Palestinian Authority and, of course, to their power companies and to their local authorities. But we understand that there's a massive debt that's owed by the Palestinian Authority power system, something like $483 million outstanding. And so the Israeli power company has turned around and said, you know, with this huge debt outstanding, they're going to stop supplying power to the Palestinian local authorities. They're going to stop supplying power completely, turn down significantly the amount of power that's being supplied. And I think that, you know, when you look at this huge debt that the Israeli Electricity Corporation is owed, and you put it into the context of individual Israeli people who are running small debts, people who have not been able to pay their electricity bill to the tune of a few hundred or a few thousand shekels, they immediately get turned off. There is absolutely no question about what the action is. After being warned once or twice or three times or whatever it is, people fall on hard times and they're unable to pay their electricity. The electricity company is very, very quick to turn the power off. And so when you have a look at the debt of $480 million in comparison to that, and people who have had their power turned off look and see that the Palestinian municipalities who owe this huge debt continue to be supplied electricity, of course, that leaves a slight sour taste in people's mouths. And so I think that it is right that the electricity company needs to stand up and say, look, you know, this huge debt is not okay. I mean, this debt is effectively being financed by somebody, whether it's Israeli electricity payer or whether it's the Israeli government, I'm not too sure. But this is a massive amount of money that's owed. And of course, the Palestinian Authority is saying this is, you know, once again, blackmail by the Israeli authorities. Mm. And this is evidence of the occupation. But also they've said that they actually repaid nearly $100 million in debts that have been accumulated over the past 2 months. The Israeli Electricity Corporation hasn't responded to that. But there is clearly a huge issue going on here with this massive debt that's unpaid and that really needs to be sorted out.
Absolutely. We've got just over a minute left. Israel's baseball team has qualified to take part in the Tokyo Olympic Games next year.
So this is an interesting story for a few reasons. First of all, because actually I know very few people would know this, but actually the Israeli team beat the South Africa team
yes,
on Sunday.
Yeah.
On Sunday Italy.
I think annihilated is probably a better description.
Annihilated is probably a better description, but I think people were still nursing the hangover from the All Black results over the weekend. Yeah. And so they forgot to watch the baseball on Sunday, Howard, and maybe it's just
probably
as well.
That's what
because, Israel have managed to get the Africa Europe berth that will be going to the Tokyo Olympic Games. There are only going to be six teams in the Olympic event in Tokyo. It's the first time that baseball is being played at the Olympic Games for a number of years. The last time I think was back in 2008, and then it was dropped for 2012 and 2016. Of course, now it is returning. There will be six teams. Of course, the favorites by far will probably be the Americans and the Cubans, depending on how all of their qualifiers go ahead. But it's nice to see Israel at least taking part in another event at the Olympic Games, even though baseball is not necessarily necessarily a game that you would associate with Israel. Of course, the American influence being very, very clearly felt here, as I suppose we do when we have the Israeli rugby team, and we feel the South African influence too. So every group of new immigrants makes themselves felt. And in this case, it's the Americans taking the Israeli baseball team to the Olympics.
Absolutely wonderful. Time is 8 o'clock.